Less than a month away from the NFL draft, I think we can finally begin to appreciate the month of April. Not only does it bring the beginnings of spring, blooming flowers, some nice spring rain, it's also bringing some riveting pre-draft visits with several guards for the Kansas City Chiefs, and I will probably not talk about that very much on this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. What we will talk about today, though, massive overhaul for the Chiefs at the safety position, changes we were not expecting even just last episode of this show. Justin Houston's knee injury, something I haven't gotten to talk about yet, where that leaves the Chiefs' defense. And again, not only guys leaving the safety position, but also new players coming in. Plus, a great question that came in last week that I'm going to dive into, trying to answer what is currently missing from the Kansas City Chiefs. What is holding them back from being a favorite, a contender, a mid-tier team, wherever you think the Chiefs are? What do they need to do to get to that next level? So we're gonna talk about all of those topics and whatever else shows up across the screen here on this episode of Roughing the Kicker. There's a lot to talk about here with Justin Houston. First, just the nuts and bolts, which I'm sure you already know, so I'll make this quick. Ian Rappaport says currently Justin Houston's rehab is progressing well. The rehab, though, also originally from Ian Rappaport, saying that Justin Houston's ACL wasn't torn, but also wasn't working properly after last year's injury. Now he'll almost certainly begin training camp on the PUP list. Adam Schefter said, so it sounds like the soonest Justin Houston would be back from his ACL surgery is August, and his absence could extend into the season. Therese Paylor tweeted that Burkholder said that Justin Houston had his knee scoped in February. Dr. Andrews found that his ACL was not functioning. It has been fixed. And the NFL then even tweeted that he's underwent ACL repair, faces a 6 to 12-month recovery. Giant window there. So many factors in play. All of them, though, just leaving so much up in the air. Rappaport tweeted on March 22nd, Chiefs linebacker Justin Houston is progressing well in rehab. I'm told he's off crutches, movement in his knee, and it's healing fine. Optimism for the health of Justin Houston is great, but I am losing optimism with the Kansas City Chiefs defense right now. And I'm going to harken back to a conversation I had on Twitter with Ben Almquist, Citadel Chief. I want to have him on the show sometime this offseason to talk about this, because he originally tweeted, FYI for Chiefs fans freaking out right now, the Chiefs didn't allow more than 20 points even once while Houston was injured. We'll be fine. And I contend the Chiefs are still losing a top three pass rusher in the NFL, which is not the difference between an elite defense and a terrible defense, but it's the difference between a good defense, which the Chiefs have anyway, and a championship defense. Losing a top three pass rusher changes that. Ben responded, the team won in the playoffs without him. Now they have 6 months to plan for life without him. And I think the defense will still be good. But whenever you remove Justin Houston and Sean Smith from last year's defense, that's not a dominant squad. Not right now. Ben said that that's operating on the assumption that neither the players nor the team have done things to improve. I say that's operating on the assumption that neither the players or the team have found guys as good as Justin Houston and Sean Smith to fulfill those roles. I'm not saying the Chiefs are dead in the water right now. Please don't hear that. I'm saying they're worse off without Houston and Sean Smith. And I don't think that's arguable. Ben, though, brings back another point, which I disagree, but I think he's got several very interesting takes on this. He says, yes, losing Jamaal Charles last year proved that. The sum is greater than its parts. I agree that the sum is greater than its parts. I agree that Jamaal Charles, by the way, we'll also talk about the running backs for the Chiefs today. Losing Charles showed what a team can do after losing a star player. But the Chiefs have lost two of the absolute most important parts of their defense here. And replacing a pass rusher like that is not a system thing. We see the difference. The Chiefs did win a playoff game. And the Chiefs won and didn't give up whatever that was, gave up less than 20 points or so without Justin Houston throughout the season. But it's not because Dee Ford or even Tom Bahali immediately produced at the same level that Justin Houston produced at. The defense was able to compensate, but the secondary has gotten worse. The secondary has gotten substantially worse in the time between the end of the offseason, the end of the season, and now to this point in the offseason, at the beginning of April here. Everything, every unit for the Chiefs, the defensive line has essentially stayed the same. But the linebackers, Tom Bahali's 1 year older, maybe Dee Ford takes a step up. You want to call that a wash? Okay, I'm okay with that. This also makes the signing of Tom Bahali make even more sense. Having Tomba and Ford starting every day is not a terrible couple of outside linebackers. But it's, I don't know if this is going to sound insane, because I know I'm talking to Chiefs fans, but I think we're underrating how good Justin Houston is, or how good at least healthy Justin Houston is. D Ford can make enough plays to keep the defense viable. Tom Bahali can do the same thing. The difference between what those guys can do and what Justin Houston can do, and what Justin Houston does consistently, what he does on every single play, is astronomical. Don't undervalue Justin Houston because you want to believe that the defense as a whole will be able to hold itself together. It will. Overall, this defense will be fine. But it's not going to be great unless things change. The offense, the running game, was very good last year without Jamaal Charles. If you put Jamaal Charles into that unit, that can become great. Now, maybe there's a psychological thing that changed with Andy Reid, and he needed to lose Jamaal Charles before he relied on. I don't know. I can't say that. And I tried to last year. I took my shot at it, but I can't pinpoint that without talking to Andy Reid, and even he might not even know or be able to admit it. But if Jamaal Charles would have been used like Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West were used last season, we could have seen an elite running game from the Chiefs as the offensive line improved. Ware and West got a better offensive line production than Jamaal Charles has had for two solid years now, at least, as a Chief. That was the best Chiefs offensive run blocking team we've seen. Put Jamaal Charles back there, that's the difference between a good running game and a good offense and a great running game and a great offense. Can Bob Sutton scheme together enough to keep pressure on Derek Carr enough for the Chiefs to win the division? Probably so. If Justin Houston doesn't take a snap this year, can the Chiefs win the division? Sure. Will they? Maybe. Will they be a great unit? Will they be as good as they were with Justin Houston and with Sean Smith? Absolutely not. And I don't know how that's arguable. And if you wanted to take Justin Houston and his cap number and remove them, remove both the player and the salary cap number and say, here, Chiefs, here's whatever that number is, whatever that cap number is, go spend that on other players. Even then, the team gets worse. The Chiefs aren't getting a crazy bargain on Justin Houston, but he's worth every penny of it whenever he's healthy. So I'm not operating under the assumption that neither the other players nor the team have done things to improve. I'm operating under the assumption that neither the players nor the team have done anything to find guys to produce at levels of Sean Smith and Justin Houston. I think Ben, again, Citadel Chief on Twitter, I think Ben's perspective is very interesting, and I'm happy to debate positivity, but I just don't see that right now. What the Chiefs are going to have to do is get Justin Houston back as quickly as possible. Duh, that's easy to say that. But they're going to have to find other ways to manufacture pressure. Even if Tom Bahali is staying healthy and staying productive and staying young on his feet as the rest of him is getting older, and if D Ford can make steps forward, those guys aren't going to stay perpetually healthy. They're not going to get consistent pressure on every down. What that does that worries me so much here is that puts the pressure back on the secondary. And what one reason why the secondary was so successful last year, whenever it was successful, although the past defense did struggle here and there, whenever Sean Smith and Marcus Peters, those units covered for each other. There were times when Peters and Sean Smith really stepped up and made a nice play whenever the pressure wasn't getting there. There were times when the pressure got to the quarterback so quickly that Peters and Smith didn't have a chance to get beat. Right now, where the Chiefs have lost their veteran corner, maybe their best corner, depending on what you think about Peters and versus Smith this year. If nothing else, a very, very, very good veteran corner, and maybe the second best pass rusher in football, those guys are not active right now. Sean Smith is not coming back. Justin Houston may or may not be back. The team is worse right now than it was before those two players left. I'm realizing that I'm kind of going the wrong way with how I feel about the Chiefs for next season. And another small factor in this trend for me is that safety Hussein Abdullah has retired. He cited his fifth career concussion that he suffered last season, and he's out of the NFL now. And the safety position keeps becoming more and more of an issue for the Chiefs. One interesting thing that I can't remember if I talked about on the last show or not, I don't remember if it had happened or not, is the Chiefs are moving Jamel Fleming to safety. This makes a lot of sense to me. Physically, he compares pretty well to Ron Parker, and this is the other way around. But whenever Ron Parker had to move from safety to corner, he was very bad, although he did a great job at slot corner last year. But the physical comparisons are there. I think Jamel Fleming, his special team instincts seem to be very, very good. Maybe that converts better to a safety than to a corner. That's interesting. I think he could become one of those kind of... He's going to be on the team for special teams purposes anyway. In fact, I believe they just gave him a new contract. So if they can make him more usable on the defensive side of the ball by being a safety, fantastic. Another move the Chiefs made was signing Jimmy Wilson. Herbie Etiopia had it first, confirming via source that the Chiefs signed former Charger safety Jimmy Wilson to a one-year deal. Pro Football Talk reported it first. Herbie was the first one in Chiefs circles. This is relatively interesting, I suppose. This came after Abdullah's retirement, so the Chiefs knew they needed to fill a spot. It's a one-year deal. They're not committing to him deeply. The biggest commitments at safety have already been made because of what franchise tagging Eric Berry and the previous long-term deal for Ron Parker. Arrowhead Pride wrote up the Jimmy Wilson signing with the headline, "Kansas Chiefs continue looking for the next Jim at safety." And then another move they made was signing Stevie Brown, who was injured. He was injured last year and didn't play like at all. He said it could be a blessing in disguise. Stevie Brown said that of himself. Who knows where that goes? Although Arrowhead Pride does point out that the Chiefs signed Hussein Abdullah, who was out of football for a little bit, not for injury reasons, for Abdullah, for religious ones. But that worked very, very well. So you can flip a coin there. Jimmy Wilson was spent 4 years with the Dolphins and then one with the Chargers, started 27 games. Again, all that according to this article on Arrowhead Pride. It's just another shot at depth. And if Stevie Brown or if Jimmy Wilson or if Jamel Fleming, if those guys can give some quality snaps altogether, if those guys can add up to be Tyvon Branch and Hussein Abdullah, the Chiefs will not miss a beat as far as safeties go. I don't think that's going to be the case. In fact, I think I'll talk about some mock drafts in a little bit. I think the Chiefs are going to be assessing the secondary pretty soon. The safety position falling apart isn't the worst thing going on with the Chiefs right now, but it's something to keep a very, very close eye on. The other thing that is still surprising to me is the state of Eric Berry's contract discussions, which appears to be nil. Either the Chiefs are having this conversation in total silence and no one's getting a whiff of it, or they're not talking right now. I didn't like franchise tagging Eric Berry. I would have rather franchise tagged Sean Smith. I've said that 100 times. It feels a little better now with Abdullah and Tyvon Branch leaving, but I think if you don't franchise Eric Berry, you keep Tyvon Branch, and you still go get a guy like Jimmy Wilson and the Stevie Brown and cover your bases there, and then spend that money on the corner guy locked down, Sean Smith. I've rehashed that a million times. I'm going to move on from that. But now I think the safety position will end up being okay. What's interesting, though, is looking at the long term, Ron Parker's here forever. Not forever, but for a few more years. Everybody else, the clock is ticking here. Eric Berry, this one-season thing. And then again, it's a huge drop-off to Jimmy Wilson, one-year deal. Stevie Brown, one-year deal. Maybe incentives on Brown, I'm not sure. I haven't seen the details of that contract in a while. Just a flimsy future shipping up at safety. It does give me pause. Let's hop over to offense for a second. The Kansas City Chiefs gave contract extensions to both Spencer Ware and Charkhandrick West. I can't find the contract details for Charkhandrick West right now. It's on SpotTrack even. But Ian Rappaport tweeted that Spencer Ware got a two-year extension worth $3.6 million for 2017 through 2018, which can be worth up to $9.6 million based on yards and touchdowns, over just under $2.5 million guaranteed. I think it's fair to assume a similar ballpark for Charkhandrick West. And Terez Paylor tweeted that he could confirm Jason Cole's report about the Chiefs working on a trade for Nile Davis. That's been in the works for a few weeks. I think there's a good chance that before the draft, Nile Davis ends up in Miami. And if the Chiefs can get anything for Nile Davis, they should take it, because he doesn't fit in the system, he doesn't fit in the salary cap, he doesn't fit on the roster. The only reason he made it through the season last year is because Jamal Charles was hurt. Ware and West are both better fits and better players right now for Andy Reid's offense. The interesting thing from the running back signing, one of the interesting things, was that apparently each running back did not know that the other back was signing with the Chiefs, and they signed very, very close to each other time-wise, which makes me wonder, maybe the same day, I can't remember, it's been a while, which makes me wonder if the Chiefs let them think that they were signing on to be the number two guy behind Jamal Charles and maybe even the back of the future, when in reality they were signing both of them to do what they did last year, still probably under Jamal Charles. But this also gives a little bit of wiggle room for what the Chiefs do with Jamal Charles. Charles' salary cap number is not enormous. It's not by any means the kind of number where you're saying, well, if they could just get rid of this, like with Dwayne Bowe, if they could make his number go away, if they could trade him for a bag of beans and get rid of that contract, the team would be way better off. It's not that dramatic for Jamal, and he is still, although the injuries are a very, very real issue, I think it's fair to expect him to still be a pretty explosive player. However, because the Chiefs have paid Ware, West, and Jamal Charles, they have paid up reasonably, not incredibly, but reasonably, for three running backs at a position that is decreasing in value in the NFL. If they got an offer for Jamal Charles that they thought was really going to bolster, say, their secondary, maybe they get the third-round pick that they lost for Jeremy Maclin, and they ship off Jamal Charles to a team like Miami, and then that becomes a third-round corner. I understand that point of view. Now, if you make that third-round corner Steven Nelson, and or a guy where you're saying this is someone who's not even going to be a factor this season, I would not want to see that happen, because I think the Chiefs have a really nice window this year if things start to fall well. But I'm already getting a little bit pessimistic because of the way the defense is falling apart. Offensively, though, I love that they went and followed up on Ware and West and locked that down, take the guesswork out of the running back position. At the same time, I'm surprised that they're spending and seem to be intending on keeping Jamal Charles here. It's a little bit odd, but I think right now it's a good move. The AFC West is very, very interesting right now. Here are some things that have happened or not happened lately with the Denver Broncos. Adam Schefter reported over and over again that the Broncos and the 49ers had the parameters of a trade agreed for Colin Kaepernick to send Kaepernick to Denver. And it was a mid-round pick to San Francisco. That was all pretty much set up. But Schefter said that the trade compensation for Kaepernick was the easy part. The tougher part is convincing Kaepernick to take less guaranteed money. That's why the trade, at the time, was not yet close and why it still not happened. The Broncos are basically telling Kaepernick he needs to take a pay cut, or that the Niners need to pay up and pay some of that money to ship Kaepernick out. In that situation, the Niners have the leverage here. If Kaepernick wants to fight for a starting job and make money, he'll do it in San Francisco. If you're the Niners, go ahead and just pay him the whole contract. It's not a terribly unfriendly deal, but the Broncos have had issues with the salary cap. They now have Mark Sanchez and nobody else. Brock Osweiler gone, Peyton Manning gone, obviously. Another thing that they just did, though, to free up some cap space that might be able to move them in a direction to make the move for Kaepernick, the Broncos traded four-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle Ryan Clady and a seventh-round pick to the New York Jets for a fifth-round pick. Not much of a haul for a very good offensive lineman. Again, injury issues, though. We talked about this last week as the Broncos are making moves. I could see this opening up the quarterback discussion for the Broncos again. They ought to be talking to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm still confused as to why that hasn't happened yet. If the Broncos can manufacture cap space, it ought to go straight into Ryan Fitzpatrick's pocket. I think he could win this division with the Broncos right now. Broncos seem to not feel the same way. They'd rather gamble with Mark Sanchez. God bless them. The Raiders re-signed Alden Smith on a two-year contract, where he's basically getting his deal is very interesting because of the issues he's had. According to Field Yates, he's getting $250,000 for each game that he's on the 53-man roster this year and next year. Just an interesting note. The Raiders, we talked about last week some, they're going to be a real player here. And even the Chargers were one of the most injured teams in the NFL last season on their path to being truly terrible. I think they're going to still struggle mightily, but Phillip Rivers isn't going to take a big step back from last year. He's going to get his receivers back. I think overall the Chargers get healthier and better than they were last year. They're not very good still. The Raiders take a nice step up. The Broncos are taking, I want to say they're taking a step back at quarterback, but what they're losing at the most important position is a very, very smart guy who couldn't throw the ball or run, and then also Brock Osweiler. Again, if they bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, or if they could get something really good out of Colin Kaepernick, or even the best out of Mark Sanchez, they still have most of the rest of that team put together there, although they have lost some key defensive pieces. And the Raiders are going to be... I'm going to bite on the Raiders. I can tell now. You're going to be able to tweet me back in a handful of months, or in 6 months, and say, you dope, you believed in the Raiders. And I'm not saying right now they're going to win the division, because I'm not sure yet. We haven't had the draft happen yet. But they are putting together, they had a nice defense, and they keep adding pieces, including Sean Smith. They keep adding pieces to their defense. They have a growing Derek Carr. They have an improving and very young and super talented Amari Cooper. They're adding pieces offensively. I think the Raiders are the team right now that are the Chiefs' biggest threat for the next 5 years of the AFC West, perhaps. But even then, that's hard to speak in terms of 5 years. Not if you're the Raiders, but if you're the Broncos or the Chiefs, where you have, for the Chiefs, a veteran quarterback. For the Broncos, a questionable quarterback, veteran defensive players. A lot of factors up in the air. I'll say it like this, definitively. The Raiders are setting themselves up very well for a long-term run. And now they're at the point where, quote, a long-term run could be starting this year, next year, etc. They've built a very, very good team, and they're in the process of making it better. So I do have some fear about what the Raiders are bringing. Overall, the AFC West is going to be very competitive, very interesting, and very open for the taking here. So I'd actually like to hear your opinion on this. If you want to tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter, I know we're getting from a biased base here, but at JB Briscoe, who should be the favorite in the AFC West next year? Not who are you rooting for, because duh. Not who do you think will win it, because we can get to that closer to the year. But right now, if you're setting a betting line, and you're saying the NFL draft isn't here yet, but you understand how the draft is going to set up as far as who's picking where, etc. Who should currently, in the second week of April, be the favored team in the AFC West? I'll be interested to hear what you have to say from that. Want to hop over to Twitter, at TideDeclare44, TideDeclare, the ever-present supporter of this show, messaged me and said, if the Chiefs strike gold this year in the draft in the same way they did last year with Peters and Morse and hopefully Conley moving forward, what is stopping them from a Super Bowl run other than themselves? One or two key position pickups this year would give the Chiefs such a young, cheap, and hungry core and gives KC the ability to bring back more of their group from last year. Felt like KC was one or two impact plays away from a stronger playoff push, and maybe getting that lockdown right tackle or playmaking defensive lineman would bring the team closer to the Super Bowl. The right tackle thing, that was before the Chiefs signed Mitchell Schwartz. That's done. Lock that up. But I think this is a very interesting question. What is holding the Chiefs back right now? And by my estimation, I got good news and bad news for you on this one. There are a lot of things holding the Chiefs back. There are a lot of things that are keeping the Chiefs from being a top-tier team, a Super Bowl favorite, a team that I can say I expect to make a playoff run. Even I expect to win the division. There are a lot of things. That's the bad news. The good news is I think all of them are small things at this point. Although maybe Andy Reid is a larger thing. No pun intended. I'm concerned about the Chiefs' second weapon on offense, the second outside weapon. Jeremy Maclin, lock him in. Chris Conley right now, that second guy, he's not there yet. But there's a clear path to that issue being fixed. Chris Conley takes a nice step. It's not an issue anymore. I think the Chiefs have a very solid offensive line, a fantastic set of running backs, happy about the quarterback, happy with Jeremy Maclin. Slot and number two receiver, question marks, with clear paths to being fixed. That's one issue, but it's a small one because it's close to being fixed in my mind. Larger issues, more issues, but still not horribly overwhelming ones. Got questions about the safety depth. Okay, if Eric Berry or Ron Parker get injured, we're going to be sitting here wringing our hands. But that might never be an issue. And maybe one of those guys we talked about earlier ends up stepping into that role just fine. That's an issue. That's something that could hold the Chiefs back, but is very, very manageable. The corners, they're the defensive rookie of the year on one side. Opposite him, another question mark. It could be Phillip Gaines. It could be a rookie in the first round. It could be, someone else we haven't heard about yet is probably going to be a rookie or Phillip Gaines at this point. That scares me. That could be holding the Chiefs back. It doesn't have to. That spot could get fixed appropriately. But right now, if they had to play a game tomorrow, I would be terrified about what any good quarterback would do to the second corner on this team, which again is currently Phil Gaines and then Steven Nelson on the inside. That worries me. But it's not It's not an unsolvable problem. It's not like saying, well, if the Broncos just had a quarterback, no, there's no, oh, if the Chiefs just had an offensive line, you could believe in it all. Or how we're talking about last year, what I was saying during last offseason, the Chiefs need a good offensive line or need a competent offensive line. Right now, it's disastrous. Okay, that was a big problem. That was a big factor holding the Chiefs back. Chiefs don't have any of those anymore. The pass rush. The pass rush concerns me. The pass rush is something that could hold the Chiefs back here. Justin Houston doesn't get healthy. Tom Bahali gets injured again. D4 doesn't step up. Huge issue. That could be an enormous issue. However, Justin Houston gets back in a decent time. D Ford makes some progress, some progressions. Tom Bahali stays healthy, plays like a young guy, even though he's slowly becoming ancient. That becomes a strength of the team if those things happen. So what I see a lot of pieces of this team all across the board, a lot of pieces of this team that could break either way. And in most of those cases could break pretty close to 50-50. If it breaks positively, there's nothing stopping the Chiefs except for Andy Reid's clock management. If it breaks negatively, Chiefs could go 7-9. And we're before the draft right now, so I want to revisit this question again after the draft, because I think it's a great question from Ty. And also something that I would like to hear your opinions on. Twitter, JB Briscoe, Facebook.com/RTK Show. What is the thing that is most likely to hold the Chiefs back this season? You can also comment on Arrowhead Addict. I think that's very interesting, and we'll be able to have a more substantial answer after the NFL draft. Speaking of the NFL draft, let's see what some of the mock drafts are pointing to for the Kansas City Chiefs coming up in the beginning of the month. Before we go on to see what the Chiefs are doing in the latest mock drafts, I want to say thank you to everyone who supports this show via Patreon.com. Patreon is a virtual tipping and rewards website where you can throw a little bit of money towards your favorite creators, in this case, Roughing the Kicker, this podcast. And I give you back what I can. In addition to just being this show, a shout out to the top contributors, which this week, Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn @D_Vaughn88 on Twitter. Those are all members of the $20 group. And the $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander and Ty Declare at TyDeclare44. Also thanks to Josh Beadle, Ben Rahman, and Jason Essler. By supporting this show this way, it gives me a wider breadth of things that I can access and I can put into this show. Also, the biggest thing it helps for on a everyday basis is a premium hosting for my hosting site that I use to keep this show on iTunes for everybody. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Or you can follow me on Twitter, like the Facebook page, facebook.com/RTK show. Share the show with your friends. And go to iTunes and subscribe to the show on iTunes so you always get episodes as soon as they show up. Sometimes the posting schedule for me and Arrowhead Addict is a little different. Sometimes I'll end up having to do a show on a different day, as has happened for the last several weeks. So if you subscribe to the show on iTunes or through an Android podcasting app, you will never miss another episode again, which is the goal, I suppose, if you like my voice this much. So thank you to everyone who supports this show. You can also leave reviews on iTunes. I appreciate all sorts of feedback, all sorts of support, however you do it. It's fantastic. Also, Mike DeVito retired. I started doing the show, took a break, and when I came back, Mike DeVito had retired. So, there's some breaking Chiefs news for you. The defensive line, still doing just fine, but that's another thing the Chiefs have to replace in the defense. So, everything I said before this moment was before Mike DeVito retired, and everything I'm saying from this moment on is after Mike DeVito retired. It's like news in real life. Now to some mock draft stuff, and if you would be so kind as to tweet me and let me know, I know I've said to tweet me a lot this show, and I promise I'm not just in a desperate Twitter mood, but let me know if you enjoy this piece of this show, when I'm basically reading off some of the most popular names that have been mocked to the Chiefs. Is that valuable to you listening to this show, or are you sick of it? You could read it yourself. I'm just curious as to what you think about this section of the show, because I question if this is good to listen to or not, but if you enjoy it, I'll continue to do it. It's pretty simple that way for me. There's a collection here on Arrowhead Addict. I'm going to start with who are the Chiefs taking the latest mock drafts with some descriptions and some follow-ups from some people. Chris Burke on Sports Illustrated has the most common recent name for the Chiefs, which is Ohio State cornerback Eli Apple. Burke wrote, quote, Mention some of Apple's selling points at number 26, and the same arguments hold true at 28. The Chiefs value big physical defenders on the edge, and Apple is that. At times to a fault, he'll be flagged quite a bit next year. Sean Smith's departure will sting unless the Chiefs can replace him with a player like this. Another guy who had the Chiefs taking Eli Apple, CBS Sports' Jared Durbin. Durbin wrote, "With Sean Smith having left for the rival Raiders, the Chiefs get Apple to give last year's first-rounder Marcus Peters a new partner in crime." Back to Dane Brugler here on Eli Apple. Tough-minded with a short memory, doesn't let negative plays linger, survivor mentality, and well-traveled. Born in Philadelphia, lived in Ghana, his mom's birthplace, for 2 years, and then to Brooklyn. I don't know whether that's relevant to if he can play corner or not, I'm adding parenthetically. That's kind of interesting. Battle-tested with experience in man and in zone coverage, average production with 22 passes defended, and 4 interceptions in 27 career starts. There's your crash course on Eli Apple. The most frequent player mocked of the Chiefs here in this collection on Chiefs.com is William Jackson III, a cornerback from Houston. I think the position here is not a coincidence. Here again is Dane Brugler. Highly productive with 48 career passes defended, including an FBS best 28 passes defended in 2015. Rough upbringing, but has stayed focused at Houston, making appropriate changes to improve his preparation and study habits. Became much more studious in the film room as a senior, and it showed, working hard to refine his craft, low-key, humble personality. And again, we're doing a lot of, like, personality evaluation here. I'm curious as to what Marcus Peters' personality evaluation was in a lot of pre-draft stuff last season. I'm guessing it wasn't low-key, humble personality, and it turned out really well for the Chiefs. So don't get too caught up in what they say about how he changes a senior, just because that is indicative of the future as often as it isn't. Now, I think we're talking about corners back-to-back here very much on purpose because the Chiefs are going to need to address it. And we've talked about this a million times. I said as soon as the Chiefs were eliminated, someone asked me what I thought they were going to do in the first round. And I said, I'm saying corner. At the time, I thought it was because they would be franchising Sean Smith, or I at least hoped they'd be franchising Sean Smith. So franchising Smith and drafting a corner, even in the first round, yes, the first round, to groom a guy to then step in for Peter's third year, this guy's second year, and not miss a beat after Sean Smith truly left next season. That didn't happen. Here are a bunch more corners, though, if you're interested in other names. Mackenzie Alexander, two writers from Bleacher Report, had the Chiefs taking Alexander. Then all the way down the board, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 picks for Jackson or Eli Apple, another for Alexander, and Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com has the Chiefs taking cornerback Artie Burns from Miami. Here's Brugler's analysis on Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson. Artie prepares like a pro, innately motivated and driven by his family. His fire for competition can't be extinguished. All right. Battle-tested over 27 starts, usually shadowing the opponent's top receiving threat, lining up inside and outside, quarterbacks completed only 24.5% of passes in 2015 when targeting his receiver. I'm going to read that first sentence again, but more sarcastically. Already prepares like a pro, innately motivated and driven by his family. His fire for competition can't be extinguished. All right. If his agent would have written that, I would have given his agent a raise, but I digress. Another cornerback option there, the last one being Artie Burns. Burns, quote, strong hands to jam and reroute and press, stings in the run support, breaking down in space to wrap up and wrestle, bat out of hell as a blitzer, that makes more sense. Closing with an extra gear. Ball skills to finish interceptions, led the ACC in interceptions in 2015. Experience on special teams coverages, record-setting track athlete in high school, breaking records in a hurdle and two hurdles, 110-meter and 300-meter hurdles. Humble worker, focuses on the details, mentally tough, and works through adversity. His mother died mid-season in 2015. His father is currently serving a 25-year prison sentence for cocaine trafficking. Wow. Learned a lot about the personal lives of these top cornerbacks, which I didn't really expect, because I thought they were going to talk about them as players more. That's okay. We got a little bit of everything there. There's a quick crash course on the corners most frequently mocked to the Chiefs. A couple of other guys who I think ought to know what's going on better than most of your national guys. Terrez Paylor has an interesting pick for the Chiefs. He has the Chiefs taking Chris Jones, a defensive tackle from Mississippi State. He writes, quote, Jones is a huge guy with a thick frame, 6'6" and 310 pounds, and he flashes quickness and strength plus powerful hands. He has the traits to play nose, which would even allow Poe to shift to the 3-tech on occasion, which is super interesting. His sack number, 2.5 in 2015, was underwhelming, but if he can develop a feel for his pass rush moves, watch out. The physical traits are there to be a good pass rusher. So this would be, again, if Jones develops here, he's got pass rushing potential, but he can also play the nose and probably would play the nose, I would guess. But with the way that the defensive line is shaping up now, again, just finding out that Mike DeVito's retired, you can lean on Dontari Poe and Jay Howard for 1 and 2 more years, respectively. I understand the Chiefs have a very blatant pattern of drafting a first-rounder the year before that position becomes freed up. In this case, having Poe leave and then having Jones step in as the nose tackle and Poe's first season not as a Chief makes total sense. At the same time, I'm curious how convinced the Chiefs are that they should be trying to win this year. That might be the best pick to win the year after, 2 years down the road, to continue to have a really strong core on defense, but I don't think that's the best pick to win this season. Same goes for Vernon Butler, defensive tackle from Louisiana Tech, Dan Cater of SB Nation, and the Chiefs going that way. Back to the secondary, CBS Sports' Will Brinson has the Chiefs taking Von Bell, a safety from Ohio State. Here's a little bit on him. Rich secondary only gets richer as the Chiefs add the thumping Bell to pair up with Eric Berry and Marcus Peters on the back end of a dangerous defense. I wonder if Will Brinson knows that Marcus Peters is a corner. A handful of analysts have the Chiefs going defensive line. One guy has the Chiefs taking a guard, which will not happen. And then a handful of votes for outside linebacker, which I think I would say by position, no. I find that quite unlikely, especially Dee Ford paying Justin Houston huge money and paying Tom Bahaly for a long time. Or not for a long time, but for a few more years. But if a top-tier pass rusher, and of these, none of them are blowing me away, but if a top-tier pass rusher dropped into the late first round where the Chiefs would be, I could absolutely see the Chiefs saying, we don't trust Dee Ford on a production level. We can't totally trust Justin Houston on a health level. We certainly don't trust Tom Bahaly on a health level right now. Why not invest in more pass rushers? The answer to that being you need a corner. But if the corners go, say there's a run on corners earlier on that the Chiefs can get to, and a pass rusher falls because of that, I don't think that's totally out of the possibility. Here's now the pick that will not happen. This guy won't be here. The Chiefs won't take him. It doesn't really matter, but I'm going to talk about it anyway because it has the Chiefs taking quarterback in the first round. Kansas City Chiefs, WalterFootball.com. Kansas City Chiefs have are selecting in this mock draft Paxton Lynch, quarterback from Memphis. The very humble write-up begins. Whoa! There aren't many mock drafts that have this happening, and probably for good reason. It's still a possibility, however, if history is any sort of indication. Alex Smith is 31. That's not old for a quarterback by any means, but Donovan McNabb was 31 as well when Andy Reid spent the 36th pick in the 07 draft on Kevin Cobb. According to my nifty Windows 10 calculator, that's just 8 selections later than this one. Could history repeat itself, especially if Reed likes Lynch and is shocked to see him fall like this? Absolutely. I'm not saying it will happen. Nice stance, but it definitely could. It helps the Chiefs have met with Lynch on multiple occasions. Yes, the Chiefs have met with Lynch on multiple occasions. And I do like the parallel of Alex Smith being 31, Donovan McNabb being 31. One thing that I think that Walter Football here doesn't even touch on appropriately enough is that Alex Smith, his contract is essentially up after this season. It will be restructured heavily, or the Chiefs will release him and then figure it out. I don't have the minutia of Alex Smith's contract down on paper right now, but this is more or less Alex Smith's last guaranteed season as the Chiefs quarterback. And I have no reason to believe that the Chiefs believe in Aaron Murray. I think they like Tyler Bray as their developmental quarterback because they gave him an extension and he doesn't get on the field ever at all in any way whatsoever. Chase Daniel being gone opens it up for those two guys to step into the second and third spots as opposed to the third and fourth spots. Bringing in Lynch would knock one of them off the roster or back to IR for Tyler Bray, which just seems to happen every year now. I don't think the Chiefs are worried about that. If they loved Tyler Bray, they would have found a way to have him on the active roster last season or the year before. If they loved Aaron Murray, we would have seen something more from him. I guess there's a chance you could say they just loved him less than Chase Daniel, or he says as a backup. That's okay. What I need to know from the Chiefs isn't who's the best backup, because I think the best backup right now on the roster is Aaron Murray, and that would not change if Paxton Lynch was quarterback, probably, because of the complexities of Andy Reid's system. Andy Reid is not the kind of guy to take a quarterback and much less have him start year one. I was going to even say have him be a contributor year one, or even the second stringer year one. We heard stuff about how smart Chris Conley is, and how he's really a truly intelligent football player and a person. And even he was struggling for a while to get up to speed in Andy Reid's offense. For a quarterback, it's going to be that compounded times 10. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense to me if the Chiefs wanted to say, all right, here we go. Paxton Lynch in the first, if he drops this far, which he won't. Smith is obviously his team this year. Aaron Murray is the backup. Tyler Berry, nice knowing you, but ultimately the future's not with you. And then Paxton Lynch just develops for a year. And then the Chiefs can figure out, hey, do we want to try to make Alex Smith happen for another season? Want to move on to Lynch? Or is Aaron Murray magically becoming a good quarterback? I don't hate this pick at all. I just don't expect with any fiber of my being to actually see it happen. One story that came around the last week or so that the headline made my mouth water. I was super ready to talk about it, and then after looking more into it, I just want to reference the fact that I know about it and then move on. The story circulating, this rumor circulating about Doug Peterson and a scandal in Kansas City, some things that Andy Reid did to hide it until he was gone to Philadelphia. There are lots of elements of it that would be very interesting and things I'd be very interested in talking about if there was any substantial reporting on it whatsoever. And I don't even feel good about saying, hey, we don't know if this is real or not. This could just be a rumor. This could just be, you know, something that is made up, but we've got to talk about it. I disagree with that because everything, and you can find it everywhere. If you Google Doug Peterson sex scandal or whatever, you can find something about Doug Peterson. And this, I'm clarifying again, this rumor. And again, I my first instinct was to go through and talk about the rumors and the implications of, well, if this is true. But if I did that for anyone else, if I did this, or someone did this talking about me and said, well, this might not be true, but here's a story. If this story about this person is true, then the effects of that would be this. And that is a completely unfair way to analyze something. If reports come out from this and anything further develops from any reputable sources other than Barstool Sports, which is, again, not reputable, and if and they have two nameless sources, I'm not willing to talk about, not even to hedge it as a rumor and then talk about a two anonymously sourced rumor. I'm not willing to report on that as fact or talk about that as if it actually happened. So if anything else happens with it, I will know about it and I will see it and then I will talk about it. In the meantime, this is not a story right now. It's just not. It's based on nothing currently. And again, I'm not even willing to say this is a wild rumor that may or may not be true, possibly isn't true, but we have to talk about it because this is a Chiefs podcast. That's not the case. It's not the case. If some random side blog published a story with some iPhone screenshots and screenshots of emails with no names attached to it talking about an Andy Reid sex scandal, I would not talk about that and say, well, what if he did? What if there was something behind closed doors? No, you wouldn't, and we shouldn't do that with Doug Peterson now. That's absurd, and to report on it with just no basis at all, and to even talk about it now is inherently unprofessional, in my opinion. But I do want to reference, though, that I know that it was a story, and that's why I'm not diving into the details of it, because currently the only details are unsourced rumors. Now to a different thing that I'm sure will be even less inflammatory. Bomani Jones from ESPN wore a T-shirt on I think it was on Mike and Mike a few days ago that instead of the Cleveland Indians mascot, the Chief Wahoo mascot, and saying Indians on the shirt, it says Caucasians, and it has basically the Chief Wahoo mascot but white skin, blonde hair, and instead of a feather, it has a dollar sign behind it. And I wanted to talk about this just in general. But I think it's also relevant to where the Chiefs are right now, because the Chiefs have undoubtedly a Native American-based mascot history. That's just true. To the Arrowhead, to the name Chiefs, to the imagery that's been used in the Chiefs' history, that's all very clear. There's no arguing that that's where the Chiefs' history has come from, as far as the mascot goes, the team name goes, etc. You can talk about, say, named after the Chief. That's fine. But the Native American imagery, though, has been a part of the Chiefs this entire time for the Chiefs' history. If you look at what the Cleveland Indians do and Washington, their issues are unapologetic use of imagery that is that is you don't have to think it's racist. You don't have to think it's discriminatory that it hurts people. You don't have to think that. But enough people do where you can say that the word Redskins is a slur. You can say that the caricature, the Chief Wahoo caricature of a bright Redskin character with a big nose, just in exaggerated features, and using a race of people as a mascot, enough people can agree. And I know a lot of you won't, and that's okay. And I'm going to get to the Chiefs specifically here in a second. So I might be seen out as a hypocrite. We'll see. But for Washington and Cleveland, using, and at least for me, just the idea of using a race as a mascot is hugely uncomfortable to me. Now, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, if you want to make that same case for them, I'm not going to fight you very hard on that. And the easiest thing for, say, the Indians and for Washington is to say, well, this is also, not only is this using a race as a mascot, this is using a incredibly oppressed race in America's history. And if you're Irish and want to claim that also, that's totally reasonable for me. But sticking with Cleveland and Washington, that makes me hugely uncomfortable, the idea of using a race as a mascot. And if you are, as I am, if you couldn't tell, if you're a white person saying, what are you offended about? I'm not offended by the Caucasian shirt. That's not offensive to me. Then that's fine. You don't have to be offended by the Caucasian shirt. I'm certainly not. But I think there are several factors that play into that, one of which is Caucasians is not an insult. It's not a slur. And even making fun of white people, if you want to say, well, those are double standard. Well, there kind of is, because being a white person in the history of America has never been a bad thing. And don't act like, well, don't say, well, it is now because we're being painted as racist. No, calm down. Being a white person in America has never been a bad thing. Being a Native American in America, bad thing. Being any sort of minority in America has been a bad thing, not only through history, but probably for each individual at some point or another. The thing with what Bomani Jones's shirt does, that I think is really interesting, is if you're not offended by it, and you're also not offended by the Indian shirt, that's okay. If you do think it's inappropriate, and you also think the Indians thing is inappropriate, the Chief was inappropriate, that's also okay. What is really interesting is people who say, I'm offended by the Caucasian shirt because it's making fun of me, but you also want to protect Washington and the Cleveland Indians. Because, well, it's always been that way. That's just kind of the history. It's just always kind of, it's not really offensive, but you say, Bomani Jones shouldn't have worn that shirt. If you're on that side of the coin, I'd love to hear from you. And try to get your perspective, because I wish this show was a call-in show for this issue, because I don't fully understand how you can cognitively do that, where you can say, I'm cool with the mascots and the imagery, the caricatures of Native Americans, but I'm not okay with the ones with my race. And thankfully, I think that's a pretty small number of people. But how does this relate to the Chiefs? Well, what the Chiefs have done that Cleveland has not done, and that Washington has unapologetically not done. Cleveland took Chief Wahoo off their hat and replaced it with that block C. Washington has done no such thing, and Cleveland is still kind of half-assing it, honestly. What the Chiefs have done, if you pay attention to, and this isn't always true, but to some extent, they've slid away from a lot of the Native American imagery. They still bring out war paint, the horse before the games, instead of the drum and everything, but you're not going to see... back in the, I think it might have even been a Derek Thomas and Neil Smith thing, where both of them wearing headdresses and on a poster or something. Well, that's not happening anymore, because the Chiefs are paying attention. The Chiefs are being smart enough to understand that even if you don't think that two football players wearing headdresses should be offensive to anyone, to you or to Native Americans or to anyone at all, even if you don't think that should be offensive or that it's not offensive to you, the Chiefs can understand, hey, that's not a fight we need to have right now. The team name is not a slur. The mascot is not a caricature of a member of any specific race, which is why I think the Chiefs are going to be safe in this conversation longer than Cleveland, longer than Washington. Now, at some point, is there a cutoff point somewhere where it's like, it's kind of messed up to me that you're using a culture as a mascot for your fighting sports team? Like, and that point may come up at some point in the future, but I think the Chiefs are much farther away from that than either of those other two teams are. And again, the Fighting Irish is a very interesting addition to this conversation, I think, because that is derogatory in a sense to a group of white people. I think that's very interesting. But I think the Chiefs are going to be pretty safe where they stand currently, because they've been smart enough to move away from the Native American imagery, because they've been paying attention enough to say, listen, even if I'm not personally affected by this, if I don't think it's wrong, if it doesn't make me uncomfortable, doesn't offend me on any level, I can, the Chiefs have had the wherewithal to say, I can see why the group of people being mascotted here that has their culture turning into our mascot could say, hey, that's, you're limiting our culture to a caricature, to a mascot, to a logo, to a team name, that's a slur towards us. The Chiefs have been self-aware enough in that to where I think the Chiefs are going to have quite a while before this is something that affects them directly, especially because Washington and Cleveland have been so defiant up to this point. And if that conversation made you hugely uncomfortable or you think I'm an idiot, I'm on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, and I'm okay with that. I just think it's interesting whenever sports and culture collide like this and we can actually say, hey, this affects the Chiefs as a organization, and this affects the culture, which is how we go right now. If I get a lot of pushback on this, I'll probably end the show talking about political correctness next time. And I would love to do that. So actually, if you're upset at this, please tell me you're upset so I can talk about political correctness on the next show. I'd love to do that. Thanks for hearing me out on a topic that you might not have wanted to hear about. I feel like I paid my dues talking about mock drafts for 15 minutes, so I spent 5 minutes on race and mascots. So thanks for letting me do that. That's going to be it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, Twitter, JB Briscoe, Facebook.com/RTK Show to get in touch with the show. Ideas, suggestions, things you want to hear about in the next episodes throughout this offseason leading up to the draft, and then after the draft will be fun, and then we'll go into a dark, dark time. If you hate hearing me talk about mascots, you can tell me that. If you loved it, I would be shocked to hear from you. If you want to support the show, even after that segment, you can do it at patreon.com/RTK. We in support financially there. Leave iTunes reviews, subscribe on iTunes, share the show with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, in real life. Just play it for people. That's if you'd like. That's really up to you how you do that. But in any way you can, I appreciate it very much. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. I'll be back hopefully sooner than this last show took. And we'll be ready to talk about the last couple of weeks leading up to the draft before the Chiefs actually get new players to talk about. Woohoo! July is going to be awful.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop
Bye, Mom! Face?